This is A Mexican Crossing Lines. Hello and welcome to A Mexican Crossing Lines with your host, Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And Duke Gomez-Shemp.
And Nemo today, too. We've got Nemo monitoring and helping us in the studio once again. Thank you very much for being here. You're listening to 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. We're also broadcasting online through Shoutcast, so you can go to kpppfm.com and click on the Listen Live link. The show airs every evening here in the Fargo-Moorhead metro area from 7 p.m. and 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. Mm-hmm. You can always catch it online afterwards if you miss our show, and you can go to kpppfm.com and listen to the podcasts.
That's right. Under updates on Standing Rock or podcasts at kpppfm.com.
I want you folks to know that I have been listening and reading your messages. I'm going to be getting back to some of you very, very soon. I didn't have a chance to call some of the people back that left me tips and wanted to do interviews, but I will be getting a hold of you. You guys know who you are. I do definitely want to do those interviews. So expect my call very soon so we can set that up. In addition to that, I wanted to tell you that your support of our station and our work is invaluable, whether it is a prayer, a comment, a question, a topic idea, or questions that you may have, and people can get a hold of us in a lot of different ways.
That's right. You can get a hold of us by calling our call-in line, and a lot of you people have done that. We really appreciate it. We may air your comments on the air. Just tell us if you don't want it on the air. Call the number 701-566-0917. Excuse me. You can also tweet us at media_PPP. You can email Cindy at kpppfm.com or me, Duke, at kpppfm.com. You can follow us on Facebook at 88.1 Fargo-Moorhead, the People's Press Project of Mexi-Can. And you can also find Cindy's public fan page on Facebook by searching at Cindy Gomez-Shemp. And also, make sure you go to kpppfm.com and check out our podcast.
Yes, we have a whole bunch of stuff on Standing Rock. There's a whole section on Standing Rock, in fact. I'm going to be bringing you updates very soon on what's been going on in the story of Kathleen Bennett and her mother, Mary Trujillo. I'm also going to be finishing up our history lesson on the roots of immigration policy. We'll be talking about that very soon also. But today, we have a very special guest from Revolution Truth.org. Our guest today is Tangerine Boland, the executive director of Revolution Truth. And it is an organization that is dedicated to restoring legitimate democracies, in part through increasing access to accurate information. She has led campaigns in support of WikiLeaks and Chelsea Manning. She also hosts online panel discussions on complex issues and Truth Revolution's new panel series on discussions between activists in the West and the Middle East is geared towards sharing knowledge, challenging war on terror aggravated stereotypes, and building worldwide networks of support between those working on ensuring accountable, transparent, and democratic governance. We're going to see if we can get her on the line here in a minute. Welcome to A Mexican Crossing Lines. Thank you for being with us, Tangerine.
I'm so happy to join you. Thank you, Cindy.
So I wanted folks to get to know a little bit more about you. I've already told people a little bit about Revolution Truth and what your organization is about, you know, kind of a quick synopsis, but I wanted you to introduce yourself to my public and also tell them how you ended up doing this work at revolutiontruth.org.
Oh, thank you. Yes. So back in 2010, when Attorney General Eric Holder signaled a profound willingness to gut the First Amendment in the administration's zeal to go after WikiLeaks, I jumped up to start something that was going to be temporary but ended up growing into a full-blown civil liberties and human rights organization. Essentially, we started out trying to do campaigns. We tried to do a few things, and as a young, nascent group, we probably made, you know, our mistakes and had to cut our teeth on a few things before we really found our footing. And where we did is at the intersection of global grassroots activism and the rule of law, in fact, rule of law in the U.S. court system. So I created something called Legal Campaigns, and it's basically a hybrid of using the rule of law to restore the rule of law and supporting that with global grassroots activism. So two different animals, and they don't always speak the same language, but absolutely necessary in these incredibly compromised times. So that's our history. We were involved. I don't know if you said anything about our big case yet, but in 2012, I'm a Democrat, very liberal, but in 2012, we sued President Obama over what was called the National Defense Authorization Act, and a provision within that law that actually granted the president, so now President Trump has this power, unlimited powers of indefinite detention. Essentially, any president can choose to indefinitely detain any citizen, any U.S. citizen, anywhere, including on U.S. soil, because of a provision that happened in a 2012 law that we challenged. So we got people around the world to support our lawsuit. We did a lot of Reddit events. We did, you know, Twitter storms. We did just a panel discussions about this, and actually had 400 people show up to court in New York City for a Second Circuit hearing, which is unheard of. They had to accommodate us with 3 courtrooms. Because we really increased people's desire or their excitement about civic participation and learning about how to sue the United States government or corporations that are abusing their powers. So that was our big case. We won handily in the first round. We actually, in a 150-page ruling, an Obama-appointed judge excoriated the United States government for their stance. I mean, they literally were saying in court to us that both activists and journalists could indeed be indefinitely detained under this provision without access to a phone call to an attorney or family or friends, etc. It was so shocking that the judge ruled in our favor, but Obama's attorneys challenged us, and even though I was working with incredibly illustrious people like Dr. Noam Chomsky of MIT and former war correspondent of the New York Times, Chris Hedges, we were painted as radicals or, you know, out in left field, and, you know, but the judge supported us 100%, and we then lost, though, in the Second Circuit, and were not taken up, ultimately, by the Supreme Court. But we will file that case again if there is need be under the Trump administration. Hopefully, we can avoid that. So that's our history.
Well, it's wonderful to know that you and the group of people that you work with exist in the world. I'm getting a lot of messages from folks that are saying that they're having trouble hearing the sound. I apologize to those of you who are getting broadcast interruptions. Those of you who have followed my show know that that tends to happen to me frequently. We do the best that we can. But I will tell you this, folks, at the end of this program, you're going to be able to listen to the full broadcast and podcast without the interruptions, and we'll have those links for you available right here on 88.1 FM Fargo Moorhead's Facebook page. But also I want to share with folks who are listening right now that you will have an opportunity to ask Tangerine Bolin your own questions, not only about the work that she's doing, but about the environmental justice lawsuit that she and her team are working on right now. So put your comments and questions for Tangerine into the comment section, and we will try to get to as many of them as possible at the end of the interview. So Tangerine, tell us a little bit more, if you don't mind. I know that a lot of people probably know what NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, means, or maybe they remember that, but could you talk a little bit more about the significance of that case?
Oh, absolutely. So essentially, Well, the National Defense Authorization Act is a bill we pass into law every year. It's how we fund our military, so that's sort of a regular thing. But in this case, there was a very little-known provision called Section 1021. And 1021 was comprised of basically two paragraphs. But in those two paragraphs, the language was so incredibly vague around what an associated force of a, quote, terrorist is, that it conferred powers to the executive, the president, to basically arrest people based on secret evidence or just suspicion that they were somehow vaguely associated with whatever is being called terrorism. I mean, terrorism du jour. So, you know, if it's eco-terrorism, or, I mean, you may have seen it recently, a fellow in Washington State was trying to get a law passed on economic terrorism. So just being someone who's trying to protest, like the Standing Rock, at the Standing Rock and the DAPL pipeline, you could, if this, that kind of law were to pass nationally, we could be called, economic terrorists. So, you know, obviously terrorism is an overly broad and awfully, you know, terribly undefined word. And so there were two phrases within that section, that provision, that conferred these powers that have no boundaries whatsoever. And one was a brand new term as far as things go legally speaking, and that is associated forces. This isn't defined anywhere in any case law in U.S. history. It's not a term that exists. So to be associated with some kind of terrorist or terrorist group, we simply wanted the United States government to define what that meant for us, because we don't want to run afoul of the law. And the other term that was completely vague is substantial support. Under the laws of war, there are very well-defined terms, and one of them is material support. So if you're delivering trucks of supplies, like weapons or food, to ISIS somewhere in the Middle East, then, you know, you can be understandably charged with, aiding and abetting terrorists based on the material support standard. But the new phrase was substantial support. And so people like Chris Hedges, he's the former New York Times war correspondent, he actually is one of the people who broke the Bush wiretapping scandal in 2005, and, you know, won a Pulitzer for this. He regularly interviews people like, you know, members of Hamas. He's actually interviewed members of Al-Qaeda. So he joined our suit, or was, you know, actually he initiated the suit because, you know, he wanted the government to tell him, what does it mean to be providing substantial support? If I'm interviewing these people, am I giving them a platform? Well, essentially, in court, the government attorneys said, well, yeah, basically that's up to us to decide on a case-by-case basis. So you don't have the right to ever know truly what this law is and when you would fall within or outside of its parameters. And we get to decide arbitrarily along the way, which, of course, that was absurd.
That's crazy.
Unconstitutional.
Oh, my God.
And we challenged it.
I mean, that's why I wanted you to explain the significance. Because, you know, living here in North Dakota, living in this area, it has felt at times like we are in another planet somewhere. The way in which the laws have been enforced, the way in which water protectors have been called rioters. There's nothing even remotely similar to a riot happening in North Dakota, but people have taken very lax meaning of the word riot, I guess, and they have been able to confer a lot of criminality on the people that are fighting for their water at Standing Rock. Now, how did you become acquainted with this fight?
Oh, gosh. Well, as I discussed with you earlier, we've had to put our work on the back burner for a little while because I incurred a very severe injury to my brain and nervous system, so I've been recovering for some time. But when Standing Rock started to show up in more, I hate the word alternative now, gosh, just a wider... Like, what words can I say now that aren't going to be horrible? At any rate, when Standing Rock started showing up in my news feeds, which isn't just mainstream media, but media that I rely on and trust. Of course, it galvanized me right away. It piqued my interest in I was galvanized by it right away, and so was everybody that I know. I mean, I think there were a lot of us, those of us who work just as you do, dedicate our lives to change, strategic change efforts and genuine transformation of our broken systems. We're pretty aware pretty quickly of these seminal moments. In Standing Rock, it was clear almost from the get-go that this Standing Rock lies at the heart of the battle for our shared collective future. What happens at Standing Rock will help set the tone for how we stand up to corporate and state-based tyranny to come, because that's what's happening. We're facing the rise of corporate tyranny. And so, and it's obviously played out so clearly on so many fronts at Standing Rock, even though the world's, especially the national mainstream media, is being so awful and not covering this. But at any rate, I got really excited about it right away, and though my health is not in the best of shape at present, my old team was always happy to get back together basically at the drop of a hat, and some new people had shown up and are really dedicated to this, and we have a really amazing ad hoc informal team. And we decided to try to apply our work, plug in somewhere at Standing Rock and apply what we do, because we knew we could bring some value to the table. So we've been actually working behind the scenes for maybe 2.5 months. We don't advertise what we're doing because it has been a very delicate process all along at Standing Rock for so many reasons that I think a lot of your listeners would already understand. I mean, it's been a very complex situation. But we've been involved in a couple cases there, and we have another case that I know you and I are going to talk about today.
Well, I wanted to kind of flesh out something that you said, because it cannot be emphasized enough, I believe, that what happens at Standing Rock right now in this pipeline company battle, because that is who is the opponent. Billion-dollar company. And
yes,
the power behind that, what they can do to people legally, is going to set the tone for every extractive industry battle we have in this country in the future. I mean, you get it, Tangerine. You said that, but I would like you to talk about the legal ramifications of all of the different battles that are going on here, and why it's so important for the people that do have the ability to take on those challenges, like your group, Revolution Truth, to come up with all of these different strategies, why that's so crucial in this moment.
Oh, absolutely. So, there isn't just one way to fight what's happening at Standing Rock. And as you already know, the abuses are varied and widespread and multi-level. So, for example, the Water Protector Legal Collective is on the ground helping the camps and helping, individual protectors. And thank goodness they're there doing the work they're doing. I know the tribe has their own attorneys that they've retained and that they've worked with for quite some time. But there are so many things wrong and so many things at stake here. And first of all, the water protectors themselves, as we all know, do not yet have adequate legal representation. It's a really complex situation, and needs are incredible. But secondly, the needs are so great right on the ground that the more systemic issues and abuses there's a threat that they will not be addressed. And this is exactly what Energy Transfer Partners wants to see happen. They want everybody so busy on the ground, just trying to survive, just trying to stay out of jail. As you said, they're calling a peaceful protest a riot. I mean, that's not an accident. That's a perversion of the language and a perversion of public perception in order to win an information war. And so this company and whomever else, the arms of the state that they have been using, and the laws that have shifted in the last 15 years, since 9/11, 16 years, those are all working in favor of incredibly powerful corporations and others, private interests, that have no compunction whatsoever about using and abusing the rule of law to meet their own aims, no matter how many people it hurts, no matter if it hurts a nation or a planet, you know, environmentally speaking. So we need to all plug in where we can. And my group doesn't actually take on individual cases. We don't have the capacity or resources for that. We just do class action suits around, usually around civil liberties and human rights abuses. In this case, we're looking at a couple things, and we can get there when you're ready as well. But
sure.
We have a way to plug in that would essentially, you know, it's something that hasn't been filed yet, which is to actually stop this pipeline altogether on these contested treaty lands, these tribal lands. This suit should have been filed. Well, we want to file it. We just need some help from the public, though.
Right. And that is where a Mexican Crossing Lines can come in and help. If you're just tuning in, we are speaking with the executive director of revolutiontruth.org, an organization dedicated to restoring legitimate democracies in part through increasing access to accurate information. And we have a truth teller on with us today, Tangerine. Thank you for being here. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. You can also listen online through our online link at 7 and 10 p.m. Central Standard Time, Monday through Fridays, although sometimes we do have weekend shows.
That's right, and you just go to kppfm.com and click on the Listen Live link for our actual live shows, and this will be on tomorrow.
Duke says, I'm the engineer, and it's going to take me until tomorrow.
Yeah.
The show will air tomorrow, but y'all are watching it live.
That's right.
Right,
you're
now.
Seeing it live.
You guys get to watch it when it's happening live. Thank you so much for being with us, for explaining to us what you're doing and why this work is so meaningful and so important. When I heard about what you were doing, and I had the pleasure of talking to Rebecca, one of the people that works with you, and I'd already heard about you, Tangerine. I heard.
Oh. Okay.
your reputation precedes you, and the doggedness with which you have steadfastly kept after these issues, even as you're telling me, even as you've talked about how your health has been at risk. So I'd like to thank you for all of the work that you do, because I think that it's incredibly important, especially in times like these, under the Trump disaster 2017. We desperately look for some hope, some goodness in our community, in our world, and I think you definitely represent that. I wanted to share with you that somebody had asked me already, Christina Russell asked, how are you helping those at camp, or who are you helping at the camp, and who will be keeping Morton County accountable for what they've done to water protectors? Do you like to take a stab at that before we go further?
Yeah, sure. You mean before we go into the case that we're
sure.
in the file, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Yes. So as I had just mentioned, we're a tiny civil liberties group. We are basically all volunteer. We never have and never would represent people individually. That is the job of the National Lawyers Guild, the ACLU, all of the lawyers on the ground. So the way that the court system works, the rule of law works, we will all be plugging in with our different areas of expertise. We've never done and wouldn't do criminal or civil defense. We do civil liberties and human rights-oriented cases. So it's just a different purview for us. It's not that we're not concerned. In fact, I'm regularly, and my colleague Rebecca Blackwell is regularly on the phone with water protectors and their family members, and it's just horrifying, the stories we're hearing. So your listeners have every right to be as mortified and concerned as they are. What I can say is that we've been working on multiple things. So, for example, when the Army Corps issued their order that the camps would be evicted, before they clarified that order, we jumped in, we got five or six plaintiffs, we prepared full-blown affidavits, we were ready to keep all of the camps standing based on the First Amendment alone. So we were ready on standby for that, but thankfully we didn't need to do that because the Army Corps clarified its notice and said they wouldn't forcefully evict anyone. The next thing we started working on after that was the bridge and opening the bridge. We actually got plaintiffs again. We started preparing affidavits, but we then heard from both the Water Protector Legal Collective and a couple other affiliated attorneys that they had just started down the same pathway. And since they're on the ground and we're not, I mean, we're a bunch of outsiders, we just knew, I mean, we knew we had to take the high road. And, you know, we're collaborative anyway. I describe our organization as radically collaborative. It's hard to shift paradigms if you can't try to embody the paradigm shifting itself. It makes you slower and smaller, but it's really legitimate and valuable. So we decided to be radically collaborative, and we basically just handed over all of our plaintiffs and our affidavits to those who were working on opening bridge. And again, we on that front, we had prepared both from a First Amendment perspective. These people have a right to be on that bridge. They have a right to be protesting. In fact, their rights have been so eviscerated in this process, we could skewer them in skewer the governmental authorities, including Morton County, in court. So we, on that front, we prepared. We also worked with the medics tent and the construction, the lead on construction, and really got affidavits fleshing out the fact that they were prepared for winter. They were winterized. They were safe. But the only thing that was not making them unsafe was that the bridge was blocked, and so paramedics couldn't get patients to the hospitals in time. So we did. We handed all that over to other attorneys, yet our attorney, who's a lead on, he's an expert on the First Amendment, he's one of the top 10 in the country, he has been consulting behind the scenes on that filing. I don't know the status of it. It should be filed any day. I wish it had been filed a bit ago, but here we are. We're still consulting on it and, you know, giving our time to do so. So those are things that we've been involved with, and, you know, that's nobody knows we're there, really, but we have been working assiduously on multiple fronts. And then we're prepared to file one big filing with the public's help that I think is really a critical case. And in that filing, which I can go into in a moment, we will work in ways to hold these various bodies that have abused their powers accountable. But we have to raise money to do this. Court cases are not cheap. And as I mentioned, we're all volunteer. Most of our group works full time. And we're doing this because of our love for Standing Rock and the people there who have been fighting for all of our rights, and, you know, especially their own and all of ours.
Exactly. Definitely. Well, let me.
I don't know if that's helpful.
Oh, it does. It definitely is. I wanted to ask you to do something for me. We're talking with Tangerine Bolin of RevolutionTruth.org, and I wanted you to explain to folks what a class action is and how that's different from individual representation, just for the people out there that may not know what the distinctions are.
Yes. So, in a class action case, in this case, it would actually be really technically, it's a multi-plaintiff suit rather than someone being represented individually. So say a water protector who's been arrested for, you know, any of the wrong reasons that we've seen. They're either going to have a civil or criminal defense case, whether they're charged with a misdemeanor or a felony. We are not public defendants in any way, shape, or form, so we can't represent them. What we can do, though, is either do a class action or, in our case, a multi-plaintiff suit that addresses more systemic issues and systemic abuses. So while we're not, you know, representing people one-on-one in, you know, when they've got, you know, they've gotten in trouble, we are representing people who have been harmed. So, for example, we could, you know, if need be, we could represent Sacred Stone Camp as an entire camp. Saying, you know, if they've been harassed or if there have been attempts to shut them down, and I think there have been, you know, we could represent any group or body of people there on the ground, you know, from a First Amendment standpoint, saying that they have a right to the freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and freedom of association, all of which have been impinged on the ground regularly at Standing Rock by different state and federally based bodies. So I don't know if that's helpful, but it's really systemic abuses that we're addressing rather than one person who's gotten in trouble, whether right or wrong, that they're in trouble.
Is that
helpful?
Oh, yes, definitely, definitely. I just want people to understand that when you say that you don't represent individuals, people might get the idea that you don't represent human beings or that you're suing for like some...
Oh, no, no.
I want people to understand like...
But we need human beings.
You do represent human beings just in different quantities and numbers, right?
And facing different situations.
Right.
So we wouldn't be defending them against having been from having been arrested, but mm-hmm. rather helping them when they've been harmed. So it's sometimes a confusing distinction for the public, but I think it will become more clear when I describe the suit that we would like to file with the public's help.
So why don't you go into that and let's see if people have any questions once you've described it.
Great. Okay, so we want to stop this pipeline. we want to stop this pipeline on these tribal, these treaty lands. This suit would have three parts to it, essentially. It's based on environmental injustice, racial discrimination, and the fact that Congress never had the right to diminish sovereign powers in the first place. So it's a three-part hitter here. Environmental injustice and racial discrimination. This pipeline was essentially arbitrarily rerouted from outside of largely white Bismarck onto these contested treaty lands. Well, largely white Bismarck, these are not sacred lands running outside of the edges of Bismarck. They're not religious lands with great historical and spiritual significance. They're not on sacred burial grounds. They're not where places, we're not running a pipeline through a bunch of Christian churches. Well, we are running a pipeline now that it's been arbitrarily rerouted through sacred lands. We can say this pipeline is actually going essentially through what are Native American churches, the land, the water. These are sacred resources. These are sacred things to the Native American people. So we will charge that this is environmental injustice. This will disproportionately affect all of the tribes who are in, stand to have their water potentially completely poisoned, their sole source of water, but also it's the religious, spiritual, and historical significance that we're just trampling as if we haven't already done that for hundreds of years. And so, I mean, it's just sickening on every level that anyone ever thought that this would be okay and, that there shouldn't be any uprising and peace. It's been a beautiful uprising to defend themselves and defend the land and the water. And we agree. And, we want to come in using the court system, which is what we already work with, to say, no, you don't get to arbitrarily just simply reroute this pipeline. So those are the two really critical fronts, environmental injustice.
And racial justice. And
yes.
I was going to ask...
Racial
injustice. And so I was going to ask
are you
accepting clients for this particular lawsuit?
Yes, actually we are. We need plaintiffs. We have a couple plaintiffs right now, tribal members of two different tribes on the ground there. I think we have safety in numbers, and we always have a stronger case with a slightly greater number. They need to be members of one of the tribes that are impacted by this rerouting. So the Lakota, Cheyenne River Sioux, Standing Rock Sioux tribe, there are multiple tribes that are impacted by this pipeline rerouting. They need to have active tribal member standing. And they either need to be residing somewhere in the area that will be impacted by the rerouting of the pipeline, or they need to have a stake in the land such that, say, their family members own property and they may be an inheritor in the future of these lands. So as long as they are a tribal member and they have a stake in the land, they would have standing with us as a plaintiff. And okay. That's what we're looking for.
So let me recap.
I want to say though that there's a.
Go ahead.
Well, there's a caveat. There's a caveat. A case like this will cost a minimum of $15,000 to $25,000 just for legal fees and court costs, and this is with our attorneys working at an extraordinarily reduced rate. I wish I could pay for it out of pocket, and we all do, but we can't. We raised a couple $1,000s in a mere 48 hours, so we're going to push. We're going to do everything we can, but we unfortunately, money really does matter here, and we need to raise between $15,000 and $25,000. If we do that, we've got a case. We're going. Mm-hmm. So we'll get to court as soon as possible.
Okay. I have every hope and assurance that I think you're going to do a great job at getting the word out, getting plaintiffs, and whatever we can do here at KPPPLP to direct people toward the fundraiser or information about how people who think they have standing can come to you as potential plaintiffs, we would be happy to do. I wanted people to know I did share along with this program. There's Tangerine's name, the name of revolutiontruth.org, the website, your YouTube channel, your Twitter, etc., Facebook. Is there any particular way that you want people to get a hold of you if they believe they have standing? And just to be clear of what that means, let me recap what I understand. You are filing an environmental injustice and racial discrimination suit, and you want to do so on behalf of people who are tribal members that are affected in the ways that you described. And that would be not just the Lakota, but it could be the Cheyenne River Sioux or other tribes that are in the area. So you have to have tribal member standing, reside in the area, or you have to have a stake in land that is in that area, whether you're an inheritor or an owner. So if I got that correct, how do you want people who do have a standing and who think they could be part of this, how did they get a hold of you?
Yes, so they can simply write to us at info@revolutiontruth.org.
info@revolutiontruth.org.
.org. Yep.
Okay. So for folks and that... go ahead.
Oh, yeah, and we will happily get back to them as soon as we're able in the next, few days. So
what do you think that the outcome of a win in a lawsuit of this kind can do for future battles? What is the goal and the purpose for all of this?
Well, there's a two-part answer to that, and it's so important to get this right for your audience because our resilience matters. This is where activism and the rule of law don't speak the same language. In the rule of law, as you know, Cindy, things are about precedence. You don't have to outright completely win a case in order to set a precedent. So, for example, even though we lost the 2012 NDAA lawsuit, our case was precedent-setting. We have already impacted other cases that followed ours. So the way that I look at it, I look at changing the world as a very strategic effort. I mean, it has to come from the inside and the outside, and we need to be strategic about the external. And so we need to think long term. I think in the activist arena, we kind of get used to instant gratification or things moving very quickly. It's not how it happens. So I say that because really, had we had our way, we would have filed this case 8 months ago or 8 weeks ago. It's kind of down to the wire now. That makes us a little bit more vulnerable, and ETP certainly loves that fact. So say we didn't win. We still would have filed briefings that are going to be I have to pat our attorneys on the back here because I'm a huge fan. They're amazing. Bruce Asprin, our First Amendment expert, is basically a savant with case law. He's amazing. And so he files incredible briefs, and he will cover every single aspect. He will leave no stone unturned in creating the most robust legal filings possible. This will affect no matter what. It will affect future cases, whether those are you know, oil pipeline cases, Native American sovereignty rights cases, climate justice cases. There are so many different impacts we could have even if we lose. If we win, we defeat the DAPL pipeline. I mean, come on. We couldn't have a better global win for people. And the thing is this is not partisan. Even though, you know, I personally am not feeling great about Trump, I'm also, I'm a liberal, but in our last case, we had people from, you know, rights groups from across the spectrum, all the way to the left, all the way to the right, providing what are called amicus briefs for our case, friend of the court briefs, filing, supporting our lawsuit. This is because what we do is nonpartisan work. We're trying to defend people's constitutional rights, their human rights, their civil liberties, their right to have agency, our right to have some agency in our shared and our individual futures. That's what we stand for. And so a win like this, I mean, the world is a mess right now, obviously. We are pitted, we the people, regular people, are pitted against ever-increasing, exponentially increasing powers of the corporate state and incredible worldwide neoliberalism that is undermining all of us and defining our futures. So every time we file a case like this, no matter the actual outcome along the way, we have so many wins, it's incredible, and we become that tide. We become the sea change. So it's a win-win. It's just we have to work together, our team, our volunteers, people around the world who help us, and the public, all together. We have to be the David to this Goliath. And then we're going to have to do it again later. But let's just see some wins for now. Let's get some wins for Standing Rock, which we don't have yet.
Yeah, definitely. I think that we all want to see some wins. I would like to feel some wins, see some wins.
Yeah.
You know, Ellen Costa says in the comments, set a precedent. Yes, I think that is exactly what these lawyers are trying to do. And I did want to mention the fact that even by taking a specific legal strategy that your group is doing, you are forging new roads and new legal strategies for other lawyers, for other people to fight against these moneyed companies. That in and of itself is, is setting a pattern.
It is. And, you know, let me say something to this because it's so important. We've learned so much as a tiny organization that was founded in 2010. And everything we've been through, I might have mentioned we worked with WikiLeaks, and so we've been through the ringer. We've done a lot. It's easy for some of us to be visionaries. It's easy to reach for the stars, and we should. I mean, we all need to. And we have to be kind of ruthless in court. We have to be hard-nosed and brutally realistic about our legal approaches, because we need to use the court system to gain the wins that we want. We don't want to be too pie in the sky in the legal arena, because judges will just toss that out. And so you have to have a way to use the rule of law to actually restore and enforce and preserve the rule of law. So it's a delicate balance, and I think that that's one reason I and my team created legal campaigns. It's that swing back and forth, that tenuous but, you know, incredible swing between, you know, the visioning, the you know, being a visionary in activism, global grassroots activism, and, you know, going for everything, because we have to. Everything is messed up. Back to how do we be the most strategic and hard-nosed in the courtroom? And we need to do both. So,
well, I hope that there are more.
And also, these strategies don't necessarily compete.
Oh, yes.
They can be complementary.
Yeah. And of course, there's more than one way to skin a cat or kill a black snake, right?
Exactly. And we've missed a few opportunities to go after this already. And while the time has passed and people have been incredibly overloaded at Standing Rock and, you know, under-resourced, ETP has been banking on this. I'm sorry, but this company is benefiting by the fact that things are so traumatized and so just so challenging on the ground, and that there's a need for greater resources. And frankly, there are people around the country who want to and aim to help, and I say, let's all get in there and help.
Yeah.
You know, this needs to happen. This is a humanitarian effort, and it's not the time for competition. It's the time for collaboration.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want everyone to know that they can get a hold of you if they feel that they can join this lawsuit with RevolutionTruth.org and the executive director, which I'm speaking to today on our program, Tangerine Bolin. You can get a hold of her by going to, what was that email again?
Yes. info@revolutiontruth.org
info@revolutiontruth.org And I have some questions for you. So I'm going to start going through these questions so that you can help answer. And if you have specific questions,
great,
audience, about the lawsuit, you can ask about that too. Or if you know someone that has standing and you have a question about that, you can ask as well. Here's some of the questions. I don't know if you can answer these or if you want to speak to them or the comments, but I'll let you take a stab at them. Let's see what happens, okay? Carolyn asks, what is the case name?
Oh, it doesn't have a name yet because the name will be the name of probably one of our first or main plaintiffs, mm-hmm, versus the defendant. And the defendant would very likely be Energy Transfer Partners.
Okay. So,
For example, in the case in 2012, our NDAA case, it was Hedges v. Obama.
Ah, that's right. That's right. Okay. So, Jill Weiss Goodman says, thank you for using the word galvanized. It was the film of the arrest of Red Fawn, which was the moment of conviction for me.
Yes. If I have a moment to just tell a really brief story from one of our one of the plaintiffs who did an affidavit for us for the bridge opening, he was a medic at the medic's tent, and he's a doctor. He's a lifelong Republican. I think he's in his 50s maybe. He has never been involved in activism, not even one single day of his life. But for some reason, he felt he needed to go to Standing Rock and just give a little bit of his time. Well, this man, who didn't believe much of the claims we were making about the erosion of liberties and rights under the war on terror, under both parties, by the way, he didn't believe much of that. What he saw at Standing Rock was so shocking and so distressing to him, he ended up going back again and again and then wanted to be a plaintiff in a case because he was so dismayed and disgusted by the human rights and civil liberties abuses he was witnessing as a doctor on a daily basis. So galvanizing is such a good word because people from all walks of life have been galvanized by Standing Rock. I mean, I sometimes have trouble talking about it, and I'm sure your listeners can relate, without getting a little bit emotional, because these are some of these populations, how much have we traumatized these populations for hundreds of years, in this country, and yet here they are facing this kind of BS again. Mm. But they stand up, and it's the largest gathering of Native Americans in U.S. history, and they're doing it nonviolently and in prayer. And I think that that's just, it's a template, it's a model, it's a lesson for all of us going forward. We want to be strategic and hard-nosed, but we want to be rooted and grounded in something that is sacred to us. Otherwise, we can't win the battle. We can't transform things without coming from a place that is deeper for all of us, whether that's whatever our beliefs are. We need to be grounded in something that's sacred to us. And I think Standing Rock really tapped into that pulse for millions of people.
And I want to just say something before I go back to the questions really quickly.
Yeah.
I have to speak to this because as a paralegal, I've seen this kind of thing happen, especially in class action lawsuits, which I had the honor to actually work on at the firm I was at. What I saw that frequently happens, and I wanted to get back to that point that you made about how there's strength in numbers. It's really important because a lot of people they don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to be in the media. They don't want to get people angry at right. them. They don't want to get involved That's in activism. But, you know, I want to share with folks why it's so important yeah. if you have standing to come forward, to be brave, and to help with this fight, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, there's that quote, and I'll probably get this wrong because I have memory loss, but, you know, something about courage isn't the absence of fear. It's being afraid and figuring out how to do it anyway. And I can tell you, as someone who has dedicated my life to these kinds of things, I've had lots of moments where I've been legitimately afraid or concerned. And it's really stressful and hard. However, over time, as I put myself out on a limb, it transformed me because I have stood where in the heart of my beliefs, I have embraced them, and I have embodied them in the world. And so it has made me a stronger, more steady person to do this kind of work. And I can also say, I mean, again, I don't want to overly toot our own horn, but we have a really loving, amazing, sort of transformative team. I mean, Rebecca Blackwell, who's been my right-hand person, she's incredible. She spent hundreds of hours working on this. And we just have such good support, and we have great attorneys. And, you know, I think that, you know, people would generally, they would feel safe with us. They would know that they're not alone. They're not going out on a limb alone. They're with a team of people and an organization. So.
Jill Weiss Goodman says, "We all expect the Constitution to be upheld, yet some feel that treaties are too long ago to matter. They were written after the Constitution, and that is our law. To be a lawful country, our government should be lawful as well. Not honoring treaties is criminal. We need leaders who lead by example." Your comments?
Oh, that's so good. And that actually speaks to the core of one of our claims that we will be making. And it's along the strengthening sovereign rights front through this particular environmental injustice and racial discrimination case. It actually has to do with dual citizenship and a sovereign citizen versus U.S. citizen, and how we would deftly navigate that and the complexities therein. There is a way to strengthen tribal rights here, and it absolutely needs to happen. It is so long overdue, and Congress never did have the power to arbitrarily diminish these treaty rights. These are treaties. They were the rule of law. They still are. So we have the power to actually challenge this and hopefully really get these treaty rights honored in the process.
Yes, and I wanted to share with you that a lot of the people that have joined our show have said that it's a great show tonight. A lot of people are sending me comments, some of them not so much related to what you're doing specifically, but more having to do with police brutality. I wanted to send out a shout out to Alan Costa. Thank you. Thank you for sharing the information that we talked about the environmental justice lawsuit, Alan. I really appreciate all of you sharing this information in case you have a friend out there that has standing in this lawsuit that could join this lawsuit and help kill this black snake. There's a lot of different ways that bright legal minds from all around this country are coming in to help fight and kill this black snake. And this Energy Transfer Partners company has a lot of money and a lot of resources. So we need to crowdsource our resources, our human resources, our financial resources, so that we can take on this fight. Once again, I've been speaking with Tangerine Bolin of revolutiontruth.org. You can go and check out their website, find out more about what their organization is doing. If you want to check out the work that they've done in the past, you can go check out Stop NDAA. That was one of the cases that Tangerine's team worked on at www.stopndaa.org. You're listening to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. You can also listen online at kppfm.com. Just click on the Listen Live link. Thank you so much for being with us today. Any last words about how people can get a hold of you, about important things people should remember, if you want to walk through the different things having to do with standing so people can be reminded of what to take back to their friends and family that might be able to join this fight and this lawsuit?
Absolutely. So the case in sum is an environmental injustice and racial discrimination case. This pipeline never should have been arbitrarily moved from outside of largely white Bismarck into across these treaty lands. We'd like to challenge that with your help. The people who would have standing are registered tribal members from any of the tribes that are impacted by the rerouting of this pipeline. So Standing Rock Sioux, Cheyenne River Sioux, Lakota, and others. If they are an active member of any of these impacted tribes, and they have a stake in the land, so either they are residing somewhere in these contested areas or nearby, or they have family that are residing there and they may, you know, might inherit one day, they would have a stake in what happens to these lands. If they're living there and it's their sole water source, then obviously, even if they're not a tribal member, if someone else comes forward who's living there and it's the sole water source, they would be able to join our case as well based on environmental injustice, because it's too dangerous to have this pipeline leak into this water supply. So this is what we're looking at. The caveat is, again, that we do need to raise between 15 and 25 grand. 15 is kind of conservative, but we're scrappy people. So we're going to do all we can to get all the pro bono help we can get. We're all volunteer. We will work very hard on everybody's behalf, but we will have plenty of court costs. So we need to do that. We will say this, any money that is donated to us will absolutely 100%, it goes to Standing Rock. So if we were not able to bring a case because we didn't have the funds to follow it through, because we can't start something without having the adequate funding to do so.
Right.
If we can't do that, 100% of those funds will go to the water protectors who need defending, the people who need the most help. We're here to help. We're not here to get in the way. We're 100% committed to this. So, you know, we'd love to take this forward. And as I said earlier, we've got to all band together and be the David against this Goliath. And we can, you know, we're a scrappy little group, and we all have so much. Everyone, all your listeners, we all have too much on our plates, I'm sure. But everybody has something valuable to offer to this fight. And when we can figure out how to come together strategically and direct our efforts together in a targeted manner, we can win.
Mm-hmm. And there is strength in unity.
And that's what we aim to do.
There is strength in unity, and I can vouch for the fact that Tangerine is scrappy. And she's smart as hell, and she's got a heart of gold. So I invite you guys to go check out all of the information that she's put out tonight. Thank you for being with me so much, Tangerine. You've been listening to A Mexican Crossing Lines here on 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. Mini Wachoni, water is life.